Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I am Ned Bolting, still, even now.
I am still Laura Laker. Yeah.
And I'm still Adam Tranter.
And collectively, unbelievably, we've reached the end of 2023. And in a real break with the way that podcasts normally wrap up the year, we thought we'd look back at the year, which is an unusual way of doing the final podcast of the year. What a year it was. We've had highs. Guess what sentence is going to come next? We've had lows. Boo. We've had some culture wars and we did a podcast in a pub. So how was 2023 for you? Or more recently, Adam, how was Euston Station for you last Friday night?
Oh, yeah, great.
Because you two had a surprise meeting, didn't you?
Yeah. Total surprise meeting, yeah.
I was, Council. All the trains are cancelled. I was in the pub.
And what a pub it is.
Oh, yeah.
Euston Station. It's on an mezzanine
awful pub,
level.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great.
And old Ned Bolton came and sat next to me.
Opposite you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're tapping away at your laptop there.
Yeah,
and you were trying to get home.
I was trying to get home.
To your family who live in the wilds of Warwickshire.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get to an event in Hertfordshire and we both had a bit of an adventure. Because it was one of those days where, I don't know what the actual problem was, Laura, but most of the trains were cancelled.
Seems like a normal occurrence now in this country.
It's just a Friday at Euston. And then the ones that weren't cancelled, it just said delayed.
Just delayed.
And then all those eventually inevitably turned to cancelled. And you eventually left the pub. I saw you at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you left the pub at...
9:30. Oh, I don't even drink as well. That's the thing.
That's a lot of non-alcoholic lager,
yeah,
isn't it?
I know. It was funny though. That pub, there were a few people getting thrown out of it. Like, people just lose their minds when trains are cancelled. They go into panic mode, of course, and that's understandable. And then they go into drinking into oblivion mode.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of people in the pub.
Yeah, a lot of people drinking.
Yeah.
But yeah, made it home. That was all good. And I don't want that to define my year necessarily.
No.
But, you know... It's been a year of high and highs and lows. Some good stuff, some not so good stuff.
All right, well, maybe
we can get into that, can't we?
Maybe, Laura, if I ask you a question about 2023 that we could answer now, and we'll see at the end of the podcast, which can't be too long because I've got dinner to cook tonight. But I could ask you again to see if you still form the same judgment, having reflected on 2023.
Okay.
Do we leave the year, in terms of active travel, in a better place than we went into it? Ooh, that's an incisive journalistic question.
Well, I think there's been construction that's happened in 2023 of new routes, including in the West Midlands.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say we're in a better place physically, but in terms of long-term prospects, a lot of them have been cut because long-term funding, second and third year of funding from the pandemic were cut rather unceremoniously in April, March.
Yeah, that wasn't so good, was it?
So I think in some ways it's better. If you, on the face of it, it's better, but actually long term, I don't know. I think things have been hampered somewhat.
Long term, the thing that I was saying to someone the other day is that I shouldn't say I feel relaxed about it because I don't, but you can't hold this stuff back. Like, it's just a case of when, and when there's that realization. We saw no one would want to repeat of it. But you saw during COVID that you could change transport policy in a couple of days if you really needed to. And we don't ever want anything like that again. But it does show the kind of stuff that we are going to need to give people choices to decarbonize. You know, the more acute climate change becomes, we are going to have to get with the program at some point. And there's only so much rhetoric will get you before you actually need to do something, because there's flooding close to home, or that people don't have the choices they need, or they can't afford it. It seemed like not that long ago people were queuing around the corner for petrol. You know, these markets are volatile. You have to invest in alternatives. So long term, I'm less worried. It's just about sort of when rather than if, I think.
That's a good point. I guess people want this stuff, don't they? So like you say, it's going to happen. It's popular, regardless of what people say in populist politics.
Yeah, I certainly, I mean, it depends what it is. A broad church of things that you're sort of like bringing under one roof there. People want this stuff. I mean, people may want it in principle and then object to it when it's, you know, at the end of their roads.
It's very true.
Born out of reason or ignorance or a combination of both, I don't know. But also, you know, maybe one of the lessons I've learned, I think, over this year is that people, how am I going to phrase this? It's almost like a double negative. People are opposed to these schemes less than one might imagine. And I think that that has been one of the learnings that I've made out of, I think, the, you know, one of the things I guess we're going to touch on is the, because I think this was new to 2023, the notion of a culture war impinging on our area of interest here. And one of the learnings I've kind of taken from 2023 is that actually, by and large, with us all sitting here in London, the ULEZ culture war has been revealed to be a little bit of a straw man. And ultimately, I don't think we'll be sitting here next year. Well, no, I do think we'll be sitting here next year. I very much hope
we
are.
I hope
so.
But I don't think we'll be talking about, you know, Blade Runners burning down ULEZ cameras and or even planting a bomb under some of them and exploding a bomb.
Yeah, if you'd had that on a bingo list of things I thought we'd be talking about in Act to Travel or
I don't think that. I think so. I'm trying to put a I'm thinking about the highs and the positive spins. I think actually, because the slight overplaying of the card of these kind of rather easy to reach for low-hanging fruits, well, people don't want this stuff. People want things of weather. I think that is, and it chimes in actually with what you're saying, Adam, that, you know, it's going to happen, the stuff, and by and large, it will be embraced. It's. Do you think, to what extent has it been sticky and slow in 2023 and sometimes gone in the wrong direction is as a result of factors that are way out of everyone's reach and almost understanding, to wit, the economic downturn in which we find ourselves sort of permanently locked into at the moment, or a seeming sort of lack of any obvious way out, and therefore active travel is still very vulnerable to... You're shaking your head.
No, it's, because it's not, cash is not the issue. This is the sort of perverse thing about active travel. And, you know, I talk, I'm talking with a perspective, what I'm familiar with, which is an urban area in the West Midlands with a kind of devolution deal with some cash.
Yeah, you've got some money out there, haven't you? Yeah,
but lots of places have. The places that want to do this have got money to do it. Have they got money to do everything they want to do? No. But it's actually about capacity. And, you know, you go from spending not very much money on active travel for 30 years, and then all of a sudden you want to increase that spend by, you know, 10 times, whatever it is. That's very difficult, because some of the things that do link to money are how many permanent members of staff that you might have in a team that are ready to go and do this, etc. The whole system of active travel delivery relies a lot on contractors, consultancies, and things like that. So the not having long-term funding is an issue, because you can't plan. But when people have got long-term funding, you know, we've got 5 years of active travel funding and transport funding in the West Midlands, and we're able to plan for it. What's holding us back, perhaps, is capacity. So it's not the
cash.
At
national level,
I can't say that what my experience is the same everywhere, but I suspect there's a common theme, which is a lack of resource for delivery, a lack of people in the supply chain. It was quite boring stuff, but if you take Active Travel England set up, which is something we heralded in as an immensely positive thing, they've got a headcount cap of 98 people. So in a very small industry, they've effectively taken 98 of the best people from around the country.
No, I've not thought about that.
You know, just little things like that you wouldn't think about.
Yeah.
So it's not actually cash, it's about the delivery, which is kind of a nice problem to be able to solve, because it's about process, it's about all the kind of boring stuff that doesn't get headlines. So I don't think the cash has been held back necessarily. I would say there's a broader kind of philosophical point maybe about, we find ourselves in this narrative, don't we, linking to the culture wars, this sort of narrative about how Putin's war in Ukraine has had a decimating impact on the world energy prices and things like that. And I guess that's sort of, it's not an untruth, it is true, but it would have been the much earlier investment in renewables. So again, this is like stuff like, we're going to get there. It's just about how quickly you do it. And the same with active travel. You know, people are suffering in a cost of living crisis. The best thing we can do is get on and deliver people cheap choices, because that's what's going to, you know, free them up from car dependency, if you like.
Mm. Do you think Adam's little area, that's very patronizing.
Adam's little area, about 4 million people.
Yeah, Adam's 4 million population fiefdom is actually bucking the trend and doing, and as a beacon of light in an otherwise
Yeah. I do see the West Midlands as a positive in the year, because I see what Adam's doing. And Andy Street's been a great cheerleader for all of this stuff and has really stood behind it. And they've been, there was a news piece on the local radio, and he was very much defending the investment as a positive thing. And it's really, really nice to see. And I think regional mayors and London mayor are kind of bucking the trend nationally. But I think it's because they've got that capacity to do the long term planning, and
they can see long term, can't they? They can.
And they're delivering locally, which makes a big difference, because you know what local people want, and people do kind of want to be able to cycle and walk, and they want cleaner air. And yeah, it may be difficult to deliver, but as we saw with Clyde Lokes in the last episode, once you've done it, actually all of this stuff, and I'm sure the ULEZ Blade Runners stuff will die down as people realise, oh, actually, you know, this isn't going to make a difference. This stuff's happening and it's not going to change.
Yeah. Why is it more feasible, without getting sort of lost in constitutional points here about the way that power has devolved in this country, but maybe that's actually the only way of answering it. Why is it more feasible to think long-term at a metropolitan level or a city level, council level, than it is on a national level?
I think it's just sheer funding, because at a national level, we've basically got a year's funding. The National Cycle Network doesn't have any funding for this current financial year, which is kind of almost over. It's sort of three quarters of the way done. And that's the case for a lot of this kind of national stuff. There is Active Travel England and the staff, but actually in terms of long-term funding nationally, it doesn't exist. Whereas city regions have got these longer-term settlements. I mean, I say that London just got another year of funding, and I think until then they had maybe up to March. And so even London was saying, well, actually, we don't know what we can deliver because we don't know what's going to happen after, you know, 3 months' time. But I think it's just because of the ability to employ people and fund, basically, long-term. Because they've got these settlements from government.
Yeah, the long-term stuff really, really helps. I think the slight political thing I think that's interesting is mayors are, and I don't think this is like a Labour or Conservative thing, actually. You know, I work for Conservative mayor. There are lots of Labour metro mayors. You know, they're all largely in cities and urban areas, and it's going to be the urban areas that are at the sort of the thick end of this and fighting the climate crisis, and where you can make the most impact.
Cycling
and
journeys.
Yeah, you can get the most amount of people mode shift. It's got the least car dependency potentially, and it's where you can make the most impact. Now, if we just sort of look at the makeup of our country and how that works, you know, there is a focus on more rural areas if you look at just the way our sort of political system works and the seats and everything like that. So really, you know, urban areas need to get on with it regardless of whether it's like the national narrative or not, because the issues are so acute and, you know, the reward is so high. And yeah, it's easy for, you know, I saw the funding settlement today for, as we were recording, for TfL for one extra, you know, year, and the quote
250 million.
Yeah, and the quote literally says in there, you know, about, you put it out, like, about you know, it shouldn't have anti-car measures spent on it, you know, like.
Well, yeah, it was the rail minister, wasn't it, saying as long as we don't upset the drivers. But it's interesting because 58% of Londoners don't have access to a car or something.
It's all politics, because Hugh Merriman, you know, he's a good minister, he's a good person. He was chair of the Transport Select Committee. And, you know, themselves, they did inquiries into road pricing, you know, and it's the same thing. And
it's I just don't think it's cutting
through. And that is one positive to take from this, is, you know, the system has taken its best shot at this, and at most for the middle ground, there's been a shrug of the shoulders. you know, most people don't even know what an LTN is. It's a tiny thing being paid out in the papers.
Do you think that's true?
Yeah. You are, undoubtedly. I mean, I've no evidence, but, you know, I'm just going to say that. I just think it's a very, very niche concern.
Yeah. What have your favourite things been from the year, Ed?
Well, we're recording this podcast. We were reminded, we were flicking through all the various different amazing guests and locations. It wasn't this year we went to Nottingham, was it? That was last year.
I think it was last year.
We're due a few more site visits, I think.
Yeah, yeah. We should. That
Laura
was fun. We did Oxford.
That's very good.
Yeah, we've got Barcelona coming up.
Yeah, yeah. And I was reminded that it was this year in March that I did a little special on my mate Steph Jones, who runs Exo Bikes.
Yeah.
And I've cycled here on my second Exo bike.
Brilliant.
You've got a hybrid now as well as your old road bike,
I got a hybrid, but I was down at Steph's. So Steph, I can't remember, you know, just to recap who Steph was and who Exo Bikes are. They're an initiative that's set up by Steph, who's a remarkable force of nature, really, and his various different colleagues who help him along the way, plus his cohort of trained, they're much more than assistants now, colleagues who've got this going. But the point being, he works with ex-offenders, and hence the name Exo Bikes, and they train as bike mechanics.
Yeah.
And they have at their disposal, and this is going to rapidly grow next year, all the bikes that are impounded from the Metropolitan Police. They have now on the brink of doing a deal with another big city in England. I probably shouldn't say who it is. And another one after that.
Wow, so they're moving. Doing great.
They've opened another flagship Exo Bike store in a really high profile location in Wandsworth Town Centre, where, by the way, because it's Southwest London, all their more posh restored bikes end up for sale. But basically, you can get a bike that is as good as new,
for
half the list price, because it's secondhand, but it's perfectly restored with new components for all the bits that need replacing. And not only that, but you are contributing towards an initiative that really genuinely offers a very coherent future for a cohort of prisoners coming out of prison who really, really, really would struggle to find employment. And this is serious, here to stay and growing fast. And they're going from strength to strength. So it's really, really exciting. And yeah, and I must admit, the first time I took my old, see, the other thing that they do is they swag bikes, they call it. So you can take, if your frame is showing a bit of distress over the years, and mine certainly was, they'll dismantle the bike and dip your frame in this amazing powder black sort of, you know, and then they'll completely restore your bike. And I think that service costs, I think, £250 to get your frame swagged and everything re-put back on your bike. So it looks like a new bike. And that is stamped with a unique number that tells you the story about which mechanic restored your bike and all that sort of thing. And I must confess, the first time they did that to my old road bike, they did it for free. Wow. I just got it as a favour.
Because
I
was sponsored.
Talking about it. Yeah, it was a little bit kind of an insider. And I've been feeling slightly guilty about, you know, literally taking them for my ride ever since. So I was down there recently and I was looking at their stock of amazing pre-swagged bikes and I just went, oh, I'm going to have that one.
Yeah.
So I just walked.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I walked down to Lewisham Shopping Centre to get some carrots and half a dozen eggs, and came out with a £450 bike.
Yeah, nice. That's what walkable neighbours will do for you, isn't it? Being able to drop off and get your shopping.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
If you'd gone and parked your car, you wouldn't have been able to go and you wouldn't have been able to buy a bike, would you?
I would not have been able to buy a bike.
There you go.
No, wow. No.
Although the funny thing is, and I can't remember whether I mentioned this the first time, Lewisham Shopping Centre has, like most shopping centres, incredibly strict rules about you can't take a bike into the shopping centre. You can't even wheel it through, right? So, but they have a retail unit in the shopping centre. So they have to go through this whole rigmarole. They've got this trolley and a silk cloth. and they put the bike on the trolley and then cover it in this silk cloth and you both wheel it out. And the security guards just go, what are you doing?
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
That was one of my favourites. That was one of my...
That was a lovely one, wasn't it? That was lovely.
From a personal note, because I'm a big fan of Steph and he's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
But we've had some amazing guests, haven't we? Not least, I think, the couple of guests who came into this podcast studio relatively recently to talk about something that was, on the face of it, Adam, quite tangential to the issue of active travel. But it struck us as increasingly important and we had those special...
Disinformation.
Misinformation and disinformation.
Yeah, and I learned the difference for the first time.
That's a bit of a test.
I won't be able to remember.
What's the difference between misinformation and disinformation?
So misinformation is deliberately spreading a falsehood and Is it the other way around? Disinformation
is the wrong bit and misinformation is the...
accidental bit.
Okay, so no, we'll have to go back and listen.
Oh my God.
Listen to our former episodes and tweet us or something and tell us what
looking
it
to
actually
make it
is.
But what we learned is it's not without real significance in the areas of, specifically concerning public opinion about the direction of travel and the means of travel.
Yeah.
And like in all walks of life, you know, these debates are prone to malign influence, aren't they?
Yeah, and at the best of times they are. And you know, we're going into heightened, you know, general elections, things like that. And it's probably going to get more silly before it starts to become a bit more normal again. So I think being aware of the tactics that are being used are really important, but also
being aware of how vulnerable you are.
Yeah,
you know,
all
it's not
of
just
us.
Like, you know, I think there's a temptation sometimes, isn't there, from the chattering classes to sit on the outside and go, look at all these people being misinformed and disinformed.
Yeah, it
whatever
happens
the
to
difference
all of us.
Is. But we are just as susceptible to consuming and construing the wrong information at the wrong time. It's very, very easy to do.
Because we all do this thing where we kind of have a shortcut for life, which makes sense. You get up in the morning, you don't think about brushing your teeth. I think this was the example that Shione gave us. You just do it. And that kind of helps us get through life, an increasingly complex world that we live in. And we kind of do that with information. We see something, oh, that looks like it's right. And also it plays into the kind of aligning with our values and with our communities. And, you know, we have this kind of need to be part of a community and a group. And I think it just taps into all of these different elements of who we are basically as humans. And we need to kind of challenge that a little bit. But that was really interesting and quite shocking. And I came across the whole topic by accident. It was Mark Strong from Brighton who'd seen, I think, Shione talking at an event and mentioned her to me. And once you start looking at it, it's amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, and Amil Khan was great as well.
Yeah.
We had a natural minister here. We had the climate change minister.
From Wales. Yeah, no, of course, Mark Drakeford has just announced his intention to stand down next spring, I think.
Yeah.
So there's a succession plan in place there. But the more I read about Mark Drakeford and his impacts, the more I understood he's not a character I knew a great deal about until I think the pandemic came along, where he kind of became more high profile because he was a very kind of deliberately low-key politician in lots of ways, but with a very forceful set of principles about him and quite prepared to push through in the teeth, relatively seemingly unpopular proposals in the teeth of opposition. And I wonder, do you know much about the sort of political scene in Adam with your sort of half a foot in politics as you are, whether or not a lot of it was down to him and whether or not some of that might be dissipated with his...
Yeah, I think I don't know loads about Welsh politics. I've been looking up on it when we had Lee, and since then, and following it a little bit. I think it takes strong leadership, but also, let's just be honest, you know, Lee, who we had on the show and is going to be a strong person driving this, you know, cabinets change all the time. So a new leader could mean a whole new cabinet with someone who's fairly ambivalent on this agenda.
Yeah. But Lee said he wouldn't support someone who would support someone who is going to be strong on climate. And he's kind of tweeted that saying, you know, very deliberately saying that he would support someone who's strong on environment. And he really believes it.
Mm.
But it was Mark Drakeford who made the decision around not building the M4 relief road in Newport, the Newport Cardiff relief road, which everyone believed was like this sort of, what they called it, the boot on the windpipe of the Welsh economy, and decided they weren't going to do it. They were going to do buses and walking and cycling instead, which is hugely bold. And I think I remember Lee saying while we were here about how Welsh politics kind of goes under the radar sometimes. Like people don't get as excited about it as they do with English politics or Scottish politics, that actually they're able to do more bold stuff because actually it sort of escapes a lot of the culture wars and a lot of the mainstream media. And I wonder if that's why he's been able to get away with, you know, or get away with, to be able to deliver this stuff without the big hoo-ha in some of the media that we've seen over in England.
And where are we at with 20-mile-an-hour cities and towns and zones? And, I mean, it strikes me that most of London boroughs are 20 miles an hour now, aren't they?
Every London borough, right?
Newham, where I live, is currently discussing implementation on a rolled-out basis across Newham. So it hasn't happened in Newham. But I do feel like 20 miles an hour is like a really positive thing from this year because we had Wales, obviously, and we talked to Lee about this. Also, Surrey is doing rolling out 20 miles an hour. It's already started quite a large area. Bit by bit, it's rolling it out default because, you know, they have these windy, like most of the UK has, these tiny, windy little country lanes. You can't see what's around the corner.
I mean, on a personal note, default I detest 60. Riding around Surrey. Yeah. It's one of the most frightening
places.
It's
terrifying.
Yeah.
It can be quite aggressive.
It's very congested as well. There's a lot of villages and towns in that kind of western, southwestern fringe of London. Mm. And a lot of the cars are very big.
Yeah.
Because there's a certain
bigger
demographic that lives there.
The same in Essex.
And it's a real, I think it's a really cycling unfriendly, despite the fact that they kind of sat at the heart of the 2012 golden cycling boom story with Box Hill and the Olympic road race passing through, and then the Ride London Heritage thing that happened after that, which lasted a few years before Surrey kicked it out.
Yeah.
Quite a few years, actually. It was only a couple of years ago they stopped doing the Ride London 100, wasn't it? It's moved to Essex.
20 on single track roads. So, if you look at this fresh, most roads, if an alien came and landed and you said, what speed limit should this road be? And it's like a single track road, you need 60. Maybe 60 miles an hour default, regardless of the circumstances.
But it's funny because they've already done a lot of the kind of main roads. Mm. So like the kind of bigger roads because of collisions there and people were driving too fast for the conditions. But it's funny because I grew up in and around these little narrow country lanes in Somerset and people try and achieve 60. They kind of see 100%. It as a goal.
You know, on a slightly darker note, in the sport that I cover, I'm afraid, you know, year on year, riders who train on the open roads, professional cyclists who train on the open roads and indeed race on the closed roads, but have to train on the open roads, suffer life-changing injuries on a monthly basis. And
these
fatalities.
Are young athletes, would that, I mean, for anyone.
And not just in this country. It's not, you know, in Spain and in the Netherlands and in Belgium, it happens, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Is this increasing?
So, yeah. I think it is increasing. I think
that feels like it.
It feels like it is. The frequency is for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. Mm.
The NFU had a raw road safety report recently, which showed that
NFU
collisions.
NFU Farmers.
That's the Farmers Union. They do car insurance.
This is not sponsored by NFU, but anyway, they highlighted that collisions on raw roads are around four times more likely to result in a fatality. And that probably links into what we've just been saying about
the speed, basically.
Yeah.
Speed and nowhere to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've got 20 Cummings default for Scotland.
Yes, another, 2025.
Another positive is the pavement parking rules in Scotland now, which, you know, have been have passed and come into effect. So, yeah, not everywhere, but it feels like it's definitely a step forward for road safety. And I say the stuff just hasn't, you know, the anti thing just hasn't cut through. And I think for me, what really brought it home was seeing a politician stood on College Green talking about, you know, the scourge of 20 mile an hour zones being totally inappropriate in a borough that is entirely 20 miles an hour for the safety of everyone in it, including politicians, installed by a Conservative administration. And I just think, you know, it's just, I think most people can see through it. And anybody who's worked with local politicians, which I do a lot, knows that the majority of things that are in their inbox are bad parking, speeding and bins.
Mm-hmm.
So they're big topics. Well, two of those are three big topics for councillors. So the idea that there's going to be some sort of culture war mounted upon what most people want anyway doesn't seem like the best strategy.
We're going through, on my street in southeast London, we're going through an informal consultation now about improving our street. I think Lewisham are doing a sort of borough-wide consultation about what measures would you like to make your streets more livable, really. And I wasn't able to do it because I was elsewhere, but my partner went to the local meeting and she said it was quite interesting because it is quite a classic London street in the sense of it's a little bit 52% versus 48% in either way as to whether or not your household owns a car. And there's a lot of pavement parking on both sides of a classic Victorian Terrace street, really. But some of the arguments I get from the motoring lobby against measures like, can we have more trees, were quite extraordinary about, but they drop all their leaves on
I've
cars,
heard
don't
this.
They? So more cars, less trees, I think, is probably the answer because that, it is bonkers. But
it's astonishing.
But arguments which would have seemed quite mainstream, actually, and probably quite exceptional, by and large people would have nodded along to maybe 10, 20 years ago about, that's really annoying, isn't it? Our paintwork getting, do now seem to be a little bit fringe and a little bit, I'm sorry, run that by me again? you're worried about the paintwork on your car rather than the benefits of having a tree on your street.
Because it's really come into focus the last couple of years with the heat wave in 2021.
When London gets hot, it gets super hot.
And we're just going to need passing, shade and shelter, aren't we?
Really? Well, this is one of the things I remember passing you talking tree, about. Yeah. You know, plant more trees. Plant thousands of trees. Yeah, do it now.
Yeah.
We can never do it fast enough, basically.
No, we're not going to.
But they need maintaining afterwards. And I planted three little trees.
I've started hugging trees. Literally hugging trees.
I love to hug a tree.
I literally, it's great,
what?
Isn't it?
What do you mean literally hugging?
Literally hug a tree.
Give them a little hug.
A tree hugger. I'm a tree hugger. Have you never done it?
Well, no. Why would you hug the tree? Laura? I can understand enjoying the tree.
Isn't there some research from Japan about, or there's a culture of tree bathing, and there is something behind this idea that trees give off something that's good for us. And also,
I swear blind, I can feel the
good vibrations.
Well, the movement within the, you know, they have veins, don't they?
Yeah,
they're
on the outside.
Yeah. You can feel it. They're alive.
I've certainly enjoyed.
I'm sometimes worried people think that, you know, people who are into sustainable travel and nicer places
live
a bit, tree huggers.
We
bit strange,
are.
But no, there's no risk of that.
Well, I hugged a tree this year, actually, and I've planted three little trees in January, and I've been taking care of them, carrying out buckets of water to them. Delightful.
Well done, you.
Makes me very happy.
Yeah, and which other guests stand out in your memory? I mean, we had some extraordinary contributions from people representing the families who, you know, quite recently actually.
Gosh, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you and your area had this terrible spate of accidents that cost collisions.
Yep. Yeah. That was one
of my learnings, wasn't it, not to use the word.
So ingrained in our language.
I just tripped over it again. Collisions, which cost the life of people and the various consequences and fallout from that, including sentencing, which was, I think, the last time.
Polly Herbert.
Yeah, we had Polly on in our episode. We had both the campaign group and Polly separately talking about their own different perspectives. And we're talking about highs and lows, aren't we? And that was a significant low point, because even though the solutions seem, I mean, not straightforward, but it seems like, you know, there are some things that everyone needs to improve.
Quite obvious starting points.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It seems so off the agenda, you know, like even starting the conversation around sentencing and things like exceptional hardship and, you know, stuff like that just feels like it, at the moment it would fall on deaf ears. And that's quite depressing. And like with most of this stuff, the problem is so big to solve. You think, well, where do I start? And everything you do, and I include the stuff that I've been working on in this, it feels inconsequential, because, you know, effectively five people are dying every day in this country as a result of motor collisions, and several, many more having life-changing injuries. And, you know, changing traffic light phasing on one junction doesn't feel like that's going to stop the bleeding, if you like, for want of a better phrase. So
you've done a lot of work with police in the West Midlands, and you've shown there's been a fair amount of impact. I mean, you shared a few videos of going out with police and targeting red light jumpers and people speeding and no insurance and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what the scale of it is, right? So it's good, and I'm proud of everyone who's been involved, and especially the community groups who have stepped forward.
And you pushed for this, didn't you, after?
Yeah, but I just want to say, you realise you're there with one police unit and there's not that many more.
Yeah.
At one junction, in one city. Mm. And my experience going out with the police is this kind of road danger, like tackling it is like shooting fish in a barrel.
Mm-hmm. So many people breaking the law out there.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I think I might mention on a previous podcast, but I was in with one officer for 1 hour as a passenger in his car, and just in one residential square kilometre, I would say, we were involved in three different police pursuits in 1 hour. First one was a stolen motorbike. The second one had drugs in the back seat and imitation firearms in the boot. And the third one was had like 15 mobile phones and drug paraphernalia and a baseball bat. So, and that was just in one area with one police officer in 1 hour.
Daunting.
And you think you scale that across an entire region where, you know, there are about a million uninsured drivers estimate in this country. The thing that is reasons to be positive, I think that there was a lot of anger, and there is a lot of anger, and the anger is absolutely right and shared. But I felt that a lot of it came from powerlessness. Because you feel like, you know, the system can't help you. There's nothing you can do about it. and what was able to be shown. And there was some, you know, some great police officers that have worked on this really hard to get it back to where it needs to be, is through the third party dash cam reporting, dash and helmet cam reporting. So in July 2023, just 4% of submissions had any form of action on. And in October, it was 81% positive action, and November, 92% positive action.
Yeah.
And the submissions are going higher every month. And
because once people know that they're going to be acted upon, they're more likely to make the effort. Because it is an effort, isn't it, to submit these?
It is. But also, you know, it's a deterrent, and more motorists submit than cyclists. So this idea that it's some sort of a helmet cam thing, or, you know, cycling Mikey, and lots
of
people. Nobody
wants those people on the road, do they? I mean,
no,
they see
nobody wants those people. We're all united against bad driving, and that being known as, I think, a really powerful deterrent, because we're never going to have enough traffic police to be everywhere.
Someone described it to me as, we can't be everywhere, but we could be anywhere, kind of thing. Yeah. It's quite a nice little catchy catchphrase. But that's the thing, once you know that there's a chance you're going to be caught, I mean, in the same way as once you think your submission is going to be acted upon, it does change your behaviour. Because, I mean, most people want to do the right thing. But
changes most people's behaviour.
Yeah, there are some people who need to know that they're going to potentially lose their licence or have a significant fine, or even face jail time if they carry on behaving that way. So, yeah, what you've done in the West Midlands is amazing, because, I mean, the problem there is just rife. I live in East London and we have some pretty bad ones, but from the outside, it seems like Birmingham has a real problem.
The stats have changed recently because they've just issued a new report. But last year in the country, for the top 10 uninsured postcodes in the country, Birmingham had 8 of them, which is, you know, it's really acute. It's really acute. Yeah. But we're on it, and you've got it. You know, we're closer to fixing this than we were, albeit still a way off. So we'll keep planning on.
Well, on a totally different subject, perhaps the last thing I want to mention is, Laura, our little excursion around the Barbican Centre, Pedways.
Yes,
do you remember that?
Yes. We did a walking. We should do more walking.
We should do more walking. It's quite technically quite difficult
year?
To do. But it was really interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We got a little guided tour around...
Alison Gowman.
Yeah.
Alderman Alison Gowman.
An alderman of the City of London, who lived on the 19th floor of one of the Barbican, or the 26th floor or something like that.
Amazing.
Where Robert Elms, the DJ, he lives up there, doesn't
he? No, really?
Yeah, that was kind of weird, wasn't it? Because it was simultaneously...
It was wonderful.
I couldn't get my head around it. It was like, on the one hand, this is a terrible idea. You know, building these high-line pedestrian footways, because you've got to keep the street free to cars. You can't have that, you know, so get the pedestrians out of the way.
Yeah.
Should be a terrible idea, but somehow there's something about it
that
has created a kind of, when done correctly and in the right way, it creates an environment that actually has a life of its own.
Yeah.
And that was my learning from that. And I, you know, the Barbican stands on its own as a kind of beacon of brutalist architecture that works and has worked enduringly.
Yeah. It's a great place to wander around, isn't it?
It's a question for architects, really, isn't it? And town planners. But there is a sort of, there's a significant... kind of lesson there for active travel going forward. You know, if we are going to embark on this national house building program, then people got to go walk around the Barbican and kind of like figure out the bits that work and why.
Parts of it don't work. Parts of it are kind of bleak and lifeless.
Yeah.
But then
you can also reconfigure them and repurpose them and don't give up on them. And, you know, don't just knock everything down and build something even worse.
Yeah, because being in a pedestrianised environment with no car, but not being set upon by cars,
or kind of amazing.
The noise of the air pollution, you don't have to cross the road. Yeah. That part of it was really, really nice, wasn't it? And being in that wonderful, and then we kind of finished, it was a bit of a finale, that area around the Barbican, the museum and everything, and when you're looking down on the water and you've got all these trailing
plants. But I come back to the fundamental contradiction that all that came about because they didn't want pedestrians anywhere near their motor vehicles. So it's very odd. Mm. I think about that all the time.
And there's loads of space down like London Wall, that place, you know, where you're talking about the museum. There's loads of space there, massive roundabout, hardly utilised with the amount of traffic flow. You know, that could be a nice public square in another life, couldn't it?
Yeah.
In another life. Yep.
Yeah, and the Museum of London has now moved or moving.
It's moving.
Smithfields.
Farringdon, isn't it? Or Spitalfields?
Smithfields. Similar, but not the same.
So there we go. So we have a bit of news.
Right. It's been okay, isn't it? Yeah, it's been all right. We're going to, keep doing this podcast, and we like doing it. And the news is that people can get more stuff if they would like to. There's no pressure. We will continue to record this podcast as we do at the frequency we do it at. But I went through an urge to design some stickers, and I thought, would people like Streets Ahead stickers?
Of course they would.
I thought that would be the answer. So we've got them done, and you can see those on our new Patreon.
This is what they sound like.
This is a sticker ASMR.
In the
pay extra for that.
In the packet. Yeah. How many are in a pack?
There's 7 in a pack. The only way you can get hold of these stickers is if you
each one's different, it should be said.
They are all different. The only way you can get hold of these stickers is if you are either Laura, Ned, or me, or you join our Patreon. And that is a small way that for roughly the price of a coffee or a large coffee with some of that horrible syrup in it, you can get access to this podcast completely ad-free, but you can also get these stickers as a thank you. And we're going to put little behind-the-scenes content, things like that, and it will hopefully help us go and do more stuff.
Yeah.
Go and do more interesting episode road trips, carbon-sensible road trips. Laura got the train to Barcelona, we must add. But yeah,
this is amazing.
I went all the way to Seville actually on the train, in two legs.
Yeah,
it was very cool. Great trains over there. Yeah.
So if you go to patreon.com/streetsaheadpodcast, you can have a look there, and we'd love to send you some stickers.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's everyone's plans for Christmas? I suppose is the last thing that I should be asking you.
Somerset. I'm Somerset bound. Also
Somerset,
on the train.
Somerset, quite a bit about Somerset. So it's my bike ride through Minehead.
Oh, yeah,
to
you
Minehead.
cycled through Minehead, where my mum grew up.
Yeah, yes, Somerset levels and all that. Well, your mum grew up in Minehead, didn't she?
Yeah, from age 6. She went to school in Minehead. Yeah. Originally from the West Midlands.
We stay in Dunster. You know Dunster?
Yes, know Dunster well.
We stay in the Luttrell Arms in Dunster, which is...
I love the Luttrell Arms.
It's just the most fantastic place.
Yeah, very oldie-worldy, full of beams, little rooms in the pub. It's beautiful.
Four-poster bed and all that. That's just great.
Yes, I think my great-grandma used to stay there before they moved down there. She used to visit from Stoke-on-Trent and
Dunster's unreal,
isn't
it? It just looks like a film set, doesn't it?
It's beautiful. It's so oldie-worldy village.
I need to go.
You do need to go.
It's gorgeous.
Inundate people with...
Do great Sunday roast.
Yeah, it's just that kind of place. Yeah. Adam? You're disappearing with the family.
I'm going, getting out. I'm not really a Christmas person. And
doesn't do joy.
Don't do joy, happiness, or anything like that. So,
although
or cooking.
With
so.
Your beard, you make a bit of a... Have you ever done Santa? Like,
no. I dressed up as Santa for a bike ride once, but it wasn't very convincing. my heart wasn't in it. I'm Leah. I'm looking forward to having a bit of time off, really. Frankly.
Yeah, you do work hard.
So, you know, that'll be nice. And
things to look out for in 2024 are the publication of Laura Laker's book.
Yes, first book.
Which is scheduled for?
May the 9th.
Can't wait.
And the title is?
Potholes and Pavements.
You're going to have to get better at
oh,
this.
Oh, God.
You're
Potholes and Pavements, a bumpy ride on Britain's National Cycle Network.
That's brilliant. And I've read it and it's outstanding and it's going to be a huge success. And everyone who listens to this is going to buy it, which is going to be great for you.
Ned.
And for them, obviously.
And hopefully the National Cycle Network. Yes. Maybe someone will give it some love.
National Cycling.
Give it some money.
Yeah, well, some money mainly and then some love.
All right, then. Well, I'll see you the other side of December 31st and when it becomes 2024.
Where are you going? Staying in London?
Yeah.
With the kittens?
Yeah, with the kittens. And other family. We don't do Christmas presents.
That's good.
Yeah, we just don't do them. But we do a bit of joy. You've been listening to all throughout 2023, you've been listening to Streets Ahead, now available on Patreon as well. Our editor throughout 2023, and a big thank you to Claire Mansell. Let us know what you think at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate, review us. Sign up to Patreon if you wish, get the stickers, and share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. Ho, ho, ho!
Ho, ho, ho!
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.